Roberto Avant-Mier is an associate professor in the Department of Communication at UTEP and research fellow in the Sam Donaldson Center for Communication Studies. He's also affiliated faculty with Chicano Studies, and his main research areas include Latino-Chicano culture and identity, popular music studies, and most recently, cinema and film studies. However, today we're here to talk about his work with Major League Baseball and the development of Spanish language radio broadcasts. Let me welcome you, Roberto, to State of the Arts.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. What a pleasure it is for me to be on here.
This is our first ever sports segment, dude. Like, this is major. We're breaking boundaries here.
I'm proud of that. You know, I've listened to your show so many times. I'm proud to be the first for sports. I can't believe that.
I know, right? I mean, who knew? State of the Arts, let's talk about sports. But like, I feel like there's a connection here, and you and I, we're going to make this connection.
Yes, let's do it. I'm proud.
All right. So you clearly delved into it. I read the chapter that you co-wrote. And for me, you know, it went straight to my heart for several reasons. Not particularly a sports fan, but a Dodgers fan, because I grew up in Los Angeles when Fernando Valenzuela was playing. And, you know, we're first generation, consumed all of our media in Spanish, and sports, particularly the Dodgers, was like a thing in my house. So you know all about how we got there. Why don't you tell us how we got there?
Okay. The article to which you refer, a forthcoming chapter in a book that's about to come out, it's about the history of Spanish language broadcasting. Major League Baseball began broadcasting games in Spanish going all the way back to the 50s. And so there's a little bit of this history of like how we got there, right? If you look at the Major League Baseball nowadays, lots of teams are doing it. Practically every team in Major League Baseball is broadcasting games in Spanish nowadays, right?
Right.
Everybody knows that in the past, probably what, 30, 40 years, Major League Baseball has become a huge international game in Latin America. And Latin America, even Latinos coming from Mexico and the US are feeding baseball currently, right? And it's been the thing to talk about for the past few decades. But in this article, what we were engaged in is like media history research, right? And media history research that specifically focuses on, in this example, we were just interested in baseball broadcasting. And my friend, my co-author, Patrick McConnell, we got into this issue of when did baseball start broadcasting in Spanish? We were just sort of interested in the question. And of course, it goes back all the way back to your LA Dodgers, going back to the 1950s. In fact, by the way, it sort of is the transition point when the Dodgers moved from Brooklyn, because they were in Brooklyn, New York, and then they moved to Los Angeles, which is what, 1957, 1958, somewhere around there?
Yeah, late
and
50s.
That's the moment where they started broadcasting games in Spanish. So the Los Angeles Dodgers at that point were the first Major League Baseball team to start broadcasting games in Spanish. First one in the major, like I said, nowadays it's completely common. It's not even a thing anymore. But in 1957, 1958, the Dodgers were the first team that started doing that. So that was a big thing in the late 50s.
Was it on purpose though? Like, did they know, hey, there's a large Latino population here and we need to do it because we're coming from New York all the way to LA? Or was it just like a, why not do it in Spanish?
Okay, that's a great question. In my opinion, and I think we're getting into this in this article, is that there are two major reasons why the Dodgers started broadcasting in Spanish in the 1950s. One of them is obvious, and it's basically the first thing that you said. We are moving to Los Angeles. Los Angeles is heavily populated by Mexicans and Mexican-Americans, right? Latino peoples, Chicano peoples. So they were very clearly trying to figure out who their new market was going to be once they had moved to Los Angeles. So they said, a lot of these Mexicans are Spanish-speaking. Not all of us, of course, but a lot of them are. And they recognized that as a potential market. They were trying to be attractive to the local market, right? What the local flavor of the local media market was. So that one is very logical and very sensible, right? Let's broadcast in Spanish because we have a lot of Mexicans that live in Southern California and Los Angeles. You can extend that because what they also wanted to do was take advantage of the fact that Los Angeles and Southern California is so close to the Mexican border. So they were also thinking, we're broadcasting games that are going to be able to be heard in Mexico, in Tijuana, anywhere in northern Mexico. They're going to be able to hear these games too. So they are at that point, for the first time ever, I think, sort of seeing these visions of creating an international market and creating the bigger market besides Los Angeles, creating a bigger market than Los Angeles and Southern California. So the second answer to your question about why did the Dodgers start broadcasting in Spanish in the late 1950s, if you ask me, and this is just my personal opinion, but I'm trying to read between the lines in terms of the research that we've done and what's out there. And this is the fact that, have you ever heard of, I'm sure you have, a place in Los Angeles that used to be called Chavez Ravine?
No, I haven't. Or maybe I haven't. I don't know.
This is really, really, really interesting for me personally. Chavez Ravine is a Mexican neighborhood, a Mexican barrio, I think even east of East LA, to wherever Dodger Stadium is now. They basically cleared out Chavez Ravine, which is the name of the neighborhood. They cleared out Chavez Ravine, and they built a stadium on top of it. And here's why it matters to me or in this context. What happened is the owner of the Dodgers moves the team to Los Angeles. They need a new stadium, or I guess they made a deal to build a new stadium, and they have nowhere to put it. So they're looking for land. Literally, they're looking for land. So one of the things that the deal that was made was they decided, let's buy the land where this Mexican neighborhood is, Chavez Ravine, because that's a perfect location for this new Dodger Stadium. So that's what they did. They bought the land. I guess the city of Los Angeles with, what do you call it?
Eminent domain.
They go in there and they tell people basically you had to leave. So if you look at these stories from Mexicans, Mexican Americans, Chicanos that were either from the neighborhood or even just around LA and Southern California, they were really, really upset about having to leave their neighborhood. Kind of like I think our version here is in the 1970s, where people had to leave Smeltertown. You know, in the early 1970s, they cleared out Smeltertown. They told everybody they had to leave. Well, the same thing happens to Los Angeles in Chavez Ravine because of baseball. So they told people, you have to leave. We own the land. You can no longer be here. People were really upset. I mean, a whole Mexican-American community was basically wiped out, right? In a matter of weeks and months, they were wiped out and told, you have to leave. So then the Dodgers come in and build Dodger Stadium. And so my point is, I think it was a little bit of bad public relations. Mm-hmm. Important thing for you, right? You would know a little bit about that.
I know all about that. Hopefully good, but...
It was bad PR for the Dodgers with the Mexican-American community, at least. Right,
moving them out.
They wanted to, I think they wanted to, in my opinion, fix it a little bit, whatever they could do to try to attract themselves to the Mexican-American community, Spanish-speaking people. So it's not only that Mexican-Americans exist and are part of that market there in Los Angeles, but I think they had a little bit of making up to do with the Mexican-American community. And I think broadcasting games in Spanish and appealing to Spanish speakers was a little bit about that whole thing was all put together, and they were trying to make amends with the Mexican-American community in a way.
I think you're right, and I have heard the story before, now that you bring it up. But here's what's also interesting, because in broadcasting those games in Spanish, they were doing a lot of corrective. I read in an article written by you, you know, all these, like, your Mexican, your Latino players were almost comic figures to the English speaking media, because we have thick accents. But the Spanish language broadcasters brought it amongst themselves, or put it up on them to, you know what, really drill down on how great these players are, correct all of those stereotypes, and then build that audience and that pride. Were they doing it intentionally, you think? Or, like, is it one of those things where, I mean, yeah, I'm going to talk about the Mexican player because that's who I identify with, and he's brilliant on the mound. Or do you think they were also thinking, you know what, we got to fix what these other payasos are doing to us?
Are you talking about the broadcasters?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. I think what you said is right on. I think the broadcasters, they take baseball seriously. They grew up with baseball. They grew up playing, watching, broadcasting games in other countries. So when they get their chance to broadcast here in the States, they take it very seriously. And what they are trying to do is I think twofold. It goes both directions. It's they are trying to legitimize baseball to Latin American people, or, you know, they're trying to make baseball a more legit sport for Latinos and Mexicans and Chicanos, right? And I think going the other way, they are trying to legitimize the Latin ball player in the eyes of Major League Baseball and Major League Baseball fans that are not Latino, right? They're trying to normalize Mexican and Latino baseball players to the United States and to the world.
Well, the good news is that I think we got there, right? Or do you think we still have work to do?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, we got there. Absolutely. We got there in terms of representation of players coming from Latin America. You know, you have way more nowadays Mexican, Latin ball players, international players than ever before. I can't remember the number exactly, but I mean, the baseball players coming from Latin America, I think, are now bigger than African-Americans in baseball nowadays, U.S. African-Americans. I think the African-Americans in U.S. baseball are down to like 30% or less, whereas the Latin ball player is somewhere like 35, 40, 45, something like that. And that's what's feeding into Major League Baseball nowadays.
So can I ask you, like, how do you even decide, you know, let's talk about the history of Chicano or Spanish broadcasting in baseball. How do you decide? How does that even pop into your head as like, I need to know this?
You know, that's a funny question. How do you decide? I mean, in a sense, you don't really decide at all. What you do is you follow the research. You know, any researcher will tell you this. Any journalist will tell you that what you do is you have a topic that you start with and you're just interested in the story. So you keep reading, you keep searching, you keep finding, and that's what sort of feeds you. And you just keep following to wherever it goes, and wherever it goes is wherever it goes. I never was trying to write an article about baseball. My co-author was. He's a baseball guy and he's a former broadcaster himself. And now in his position as university professor, he's trying to do research on like media history and baseball history. So I guess for him, that was really obvious from his side. For me, one of the things that I brought to this article is, and this is the thing that ties together all my work, whether it's popular music or baseball or film and cinema studies, is I'm interested in the conversation about like, you know, where do Latinos and Hispanics fit into the story? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we all know, those of us that are, you know, professionals and teaching classes and university professors, and even, you know, anybody with an education knows this, right? Latinos and Hispanics in America, we're sort of written out of the story. We have been written out of the story for decades and decades and decades, if not 100 years, right? And so when it comes to media, my focus has always been, where do Latinos and Hispanics fit into this conversation? So my first book, for example, was about rock music, of all things. And mm-hmm. I was asking the question of like, why would you write a book about rock music and then Latinos or Hispanics? And I was like, well, you know, we that are from here, from El Paso, from Mexico, from other Latin American countries, we know that Latinos love rock and roll. We love rock music and we identify with it, right? Growing up here on the border, like I did, a Mexican American kid from El Paso, we like heavy metal and we like punk. Yeah. And so why is that not part of this greater narrative about rock and roll or rock music or rock history, right? So when I wrote my first book, I was asking the question of like, where are the Latinos and the Mexican kids like me, and where do we fit into this rock and roll story? Well, if you adapt that to the work that I'm doing more recently in film and cinema, I'm talking about, you know, where do Latinos and Hispanics fit into U.S. movie history, right? Because right. We're mostly not there. And if we are there in U.S. movies, Hollywood movies, we're stereotypes. We're minority in terms of representation, if ever. But then when we get included, we're minority characters or stereotypes of some sort, right? Well, then if you adapt that into baseball, I was kind of asking the same question. Here we have baseball and sports, American sports, U.S. sports history and baseball, this big, huge thing. And I'm asking questions of like, where do the Latinos and Hispanics fit into this story, right? Because we know we are part of it. And so I'm always interested in the question of like, when did we start? How did we start? How far back does it go? And what are the stories and things like we're talking about today? Like, you know, what are these bigger picture things that are like, you know, really fascinating for me that we can talk about and we can write about and that are interesting to talk about?
And the flavor that they put into it. So listening to a Dodgers baseball game in Spanish is like listening to a soccer game. Like, it is explosive. And then you go back and you watch baseball on American TV and it's like, oh, okay, this is cool.
That's really interesting. You know, there's another study in itself, right? The differences. The yeah. differences between an English language broadcast and a Spanish language broadcast. Now, that would be a really interesting study.
Yeah, because the Spanish one wins.
Way more animated, way more, you know, a lot of vocal inflection, a lot of sort of their personality goes into it. And I listen to and watch baseball here in the U.S., me personally, and they're very monotone. It's very sort of plain spoken. They keep it, you know, level and chill.
Yeah. And meanwhile, there's a party going on over there.
Yeah.
Well, I can't thank you enough for being my first ever sports segment. I feel like we could have just kept talking even more. But yeah, you have broken boundaries. Today, my guest has been Roberto Avantemier, and we've been talking sports. Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really proud of that. That's really cool.